I'm Russell Rowland, author of 56 Counties, A Montana Journey. Welcome to 56 Counties.
Montana has a long history of political corruption, starting with the Copper Kings. But we also have a history of standing up to these people and putting restrictions on campaign financing, as we did with the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912, and also with Senate Bill 289, which was passed in 2015 to try and force more disclosure in campaign financing. Jeff Mangan is a former state legislator and senator, and he's also the former commissioner of political practices in Montana. Jeff has come up with an initiative that he's trying to get on the ballot for November that will bypass Citizens United and completely do away with corporate financing in political campaigns. I had a chance to sit down with Jeff and talk about the Montana Plan. I'm happy to welcome Jeff Mangan to the show here. Thanks for joining me, Jeff.
Of course. Glad to be here.
So let's just jump right in with this initiative that you've got planned. And the basic goal is to create a system that prevents corporate money in Montana politics. So why don't you give us a brief explanation of what that's going to look like and what prompted you to pursue this?
I'll start with the latter first. Those of us that have been interested in campaign finance, you know, in my previous work as a commissioner, it's always been ever since the Citizens United ruling in 2010, you know, trying to work on a solution that solves this money in politics problem that just continues to get worse year after year after year. And now 16 years later, I mean, I think it's at a real emergent point. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, since that Citizens United ruling, how can we stop the flow of dark money and corporate money? Everybody always goes back to Citizens United and First Amendment and the right to speak. We're taking a look at it differently. We're taking a look at another constitutional amendment, the 10th Amendment, federalism. You know, states create their corporations. States determine what powers a corporation have. Each individually. It's not a federal law. It's each state individually. And when we went back in history, we kind of forgot that corporations looked a lot different 150 years ago when states were, you know, basically said very specific powers. You could only be a corporation for 10 years. You could only do one thing. You could only be a railroad. You couldn't own residential property. Very specific powers that they had. And as the states grew and more states, and they started competing for their business to come in their states, the states have started adopting general powers clauses. Basically, if you incorporate in our state, you have all general powers, meaning they could do anything. And the courts have ultimately ruled that that means that the same powers that you and I have. So mm-hmm. That's where that right to speech comes in. What the states never have done is gave up their authority to change those powers in the first place. We just haven't done it in over 125 years. So all we're saying is, yep, we're going back to the foundation. If you want the pleasure of doing business in the state of Montana, your corporate charter is going to say you can do all the things you currently do with the exception of spending money in politics.
Mm.
And the power's not there, the right to do so doesn't apply. So it doesn't overturn Citizens United. It basically right. makes Citizens United irrelevant, makes it moot in the state of Montana.
It's beautiful.
You know, I can't take credit for it. Other folks, all I can take credit for is I have very smart friends that are committed to the cause as I have been. You know, I've said, we need to do this in Montana. Montana needs to lead this kind of effort. We're going to lead this effort. I'm going to roll up my sleeves and start working on it. And that's what I've been doing for the last year and several months.
So you mentioned you were the commissioner of political practices at one time, and you also you served as a senator and a legislator too, right?
Right. I served from 99 to 2005. I served as both a representative and a senator from Great Falls. And in 2017, I was appointed Montana's commissioner of political practices and served in that role for a 6-year term. You can only serve one 6-year mm-hmm. term, and that term ended in 2023.
Okay. So with that inside knowledge that you have, how do you plan to structure this so that it can be monitored?
It's kind of the beauty of it. And it's, I think it's one of the reasons that we have gotten so much support from the average Montana citizen. We know it when we see it. When we end corporate money in Montana, and that's all corporate money, whether it's a for-profit CS, whatever type of corporation, LLC, to a nonprofit C3, C4, C4, the conduit of all that dark money, that's one of the most important parts of what we're doing, unions, associations. When you cut that spigot off that they can't spend in politics or give to super PACs who spend independent expenditures in politics, we're going to know. We're going to see it. And we're going to see a huge difference in the state of Montana because those ads shouldn't be there. And if they are there, what we should be able to find is full disclosure of who's funding those ads, including the individual donors. And it will be easy to find. And if it's not there, I can guarantee you the people are going to say, this is wrong. You're not following the law. Today, there's so much money. There's so much of it. You have no idea if folks are following the law or not.
Right.
We have no idea if all of those folks that are putting out independent expenditures and spending money in our elections are actually filing with either the FEC or the Commissioner of Political Practices. No idea. There's so much of it. The average Montana citizen, they just kind of throw up their hands. What can we do? There's exactly. too much of it.
Yeah, and I think that's true nationally, too. But yeah, Montana, of course, has a long history of fighting against this kind of thing, going back to the Copper Kings, which led to the passing of the Corrupt Practices Act in 1912, which said that corporations can't make contributions to state elections. So talk about how well that worked until Citizens United came along.
Certainly, and that's one of the things I love talking about the most, our history, our legacy in the state of Montana. And quite honestly, is one of the main reasons I'm doing this. And I believe that Montana, has the bona fides to lead the nation in this effort because of what we did, fighting corruption from the Copper Kings all the way back to from the 1900s to 1912 and the passage by Citizens Initiative of the Corrupt Practices Act. That was our law all the way until 2012 after Citizens United. And we lost. We won at the Montana Supreme Court level. The Montana Supreme Court said that the Corrupt Practices Act is necessary because of the corruption that we faced. Of course, we lost at the Supreme Court a little time later. But you know what Montana did right after that, Russell? We put another initiative on the ballot. And while it didn't hold any weight in law, it was basically a policy statement that said corporations aren't people. Our elected officials need to work to overturn Citizens United and let everyone know that Montana will not stand for corporations being held at the same level as you and I. And that law is still on our books. They're still entitled to do that. And it passed basically the same percentage as we passed the Corrupt Practices Act back in 1912.
Wow.
I mean, we know it when we see it. Kind of back to your original question, I kind of jumped over it a little bit there, is what happened was we didn't have corporation spending in our elections
right.
for 98 years, almost 100 years. And just look what's happened since 2010, 2012 in Montana to today. We have seen a literal race up. You see a graph, it literally goes straight across, just as flat as it can be, and literally state that's how the spending has gone from corporations and dark money through corporations like C4s and others. So what we've seen is exactly what we expected to happen in 1912, that this pouring of money into our elections that is anonymous, that we can't track. We don't know who's buying those ads. We don't know what influencer are trying to purchase. We don't know what special interest group is behind it. Whether you're right or left, it's both sides. And the losers in all of this are the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be able to talk to our politicians. We used to be able to talk to the folks, our candidates running for office, sit down, see them at your doors, knocking at your doors, asking them questions that are important to your life and how they can affect the kind of change that you think is important. We don't see that anymore. It's all right. messaging through money, through social media and others at a level that's just unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to backtrack a little bit to the, so when Citizens United was passed, Montana was the last state to give in to that. And it was an interesting fight. Bullock was the attorney general at the time, and we refused to adopt it as a, at the state level, right? We were the last state.
Right. It, our law was still on the books.
Right.
You know, the Corrupt Practices Act. And like you said, because of our history of corruption and part of the Citizens United ruling, it doesn't say that it's, you know, it makes corporations people, although that's, you know, kind of the general feeling that comes out of it. What the ruling was is even more scary. They said that independent political expenditures by corporations cannot be corrupting and therefore cannot be regulated. I mean, that's literally what it says, cannot be corrupting and therefore cannot be regulated. And as a matter of fact, they took it one step further and said, can't even give the appearance of corruption. And what Montana said, and A.G. Bullock at the time and others said, wait a minute, we can show you what kind of corruption happened from statehood to 1912. I mean, the corruption is historically documented, and you could continue that forward. So, yes, we can prove that Montana had corruption so bad that it corrupted our system. And like you said, it was supported by the Montana Supreme Court, but ultimately by a 5-4 decision at the U.S. Supreme Court, they found that it did violate Citizens United.
So one of the things that drives me nuts about this whole argument is that the way they use free speech as their foundation for this argument, and it's so clearly absurd to even present that as the foundation for it, because as a citizen only allowed to give, you know, a few hundred dollars, and they're pouring thousands, tens of thousands of dollars into something, that completely defeats the whole idea of free speech. I mean, they're completely drowning out the basic citizens, right?
Well, you're not getting any disagreement from me, Russell. Absolutely. I mean, corporations can't give, you can't give straight to candidates. What they do, however, is, give to you through what's called independent expenditures that can't be coordinated with candidates. And I like to point out, because of what's happened in the last 16 years since Citizens United, plus the advent of how social media has begun to dominate and tech has begun to dominate our system, coordination doesn't matter in a sense anymore, because they're telling you exactly what they're going to do when they put their money into these super PACs. They announce it. Just this last 6 months, you can find at least 4 or 5 examples of tech firms, AI firms, cryptocurrency firms, et cetera, saying we're creating a super PAC of hundreds of millions of dollars for the express purposes to elect folks that support our cause or defeat folks that don't.
Right.
They don't have to coordinate anymore. They don't have to sit in the same room and say, you spend here, we'll spend here. They're telling them exactly what they're going to do. They just announce it, and they make such a big, and the amount of money is so ridiculous. You know, if you're looking at $100 million on top of $100 million on top of $100 million that they're saying they're going to spend in these elections, of course, the candidate knows exactly. And it's not just those firms. Now, all the other folks, you know, whether it's energy or whatever industry that's spending the money these days. Matter of fact, it's so commonplace. You read it in the news every day. Super PAC for this candidate doing this. Super PAC for these types of candidates doing this. We all know exactly what's happening.
Talk to me about Senate Bill 289. Is that the one you mentioned earlier?
The Disclose Act. Yep.
Okay. So has that changed anything, or has it been fairly ineffective?
One of the reasons that the Montana plan will be so effective when it's passed and there's no longer corporate and dark money coming in our system is because we have a strong campaign finance disclosure and transparency law, which was passed in 2015 as the Disclose Act. So it's very specific. Lots of candidates and electeds don't necessarily like it because they think it's fairly, there's a lot of work to do to be transparent. What I think is everybody, when they say that, I think, oh, that's a good thing. You should be embracing that transparency. You should let everybody know exactly what you're spending and how you're spending that money. But because we have the Disclose Act and every individual who donates or contributes to campaigns should be disclosed in those expenditures, that's what Montana needs to see. And we'll have that in place and we'll be able to see that. Where the rubber hits the road, I mean, in the dark money film heading up to the passage of the Disclose Act, for example, I mean, and then since is this dark money, this anonymous money being where C4s are used as the conduit to get into PACs and into our elections. So when folks want to remain anonymous, they can't remain anonymous by giving directly to a PAC because they have to disclose those individual contributions. So what they do is they give to a C4. All these C4s are created, whether there's some very prominent C4s, and then there's brand new ones that pop up all the time. Montanans for a Blue Sky, or the American Citizen against Cactus Rot or something. I mean, whatever it might be. And individuals give money to that C4. The C4 turns around, gives money to the PAC, and what the PAC discloses is the name of that C4 as the donor, not the underlying donors beneath that. So if you eliminate the ability of corporations, including C4s, to spend in politics, if those folks want to give money, they have to give to the PAC and disclose them as the donor. So that's how the two work together. So while the Disclose Act, Senate Bill 289, did a lot of good in Montana, it brought a level of disclosure and transparency up. It couldn't reach that core C4 dark money issue, truly underneath that money. This will allow the Disclose Act of Montana to actually see those donors.
Right. Tell me about what it was like when you were campaigning back before all this happened. Was it? It must have been a lot more like simple, basically.
Oh, it's. I mean, it's. I mean, it's, and that's a long time ago. I'd be back to, like I said, 1999 to 2005, and I haven't been involved in partisan politics since 2006, since my last term. I've really been focused on things like this and other issues that are important to me, that I think are important to Montanans. But when I first ran, I think I spent maybe $1,500 in my $2,000 in my first race. I remember I did the doors three times in the primary and three times in the general, and I followed that up that same work through the times that I ran. But I don't think I ever spent more than a few thousand dollars. Of course, things were a little bit cheaper back then, but and that was kind of normal for most of the legislature. Now it's, you know, people are spending in these, you know, the district hasn't changed that much. I mean, I probably had 6,000 constituents versus what, 10,000 today, or whatever the number might be. But the cost that they're spending in some of those races, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 or more in a local legislative race. It's a different time.
It's insane.
And then the other thing is you don't see as many, I don't believe. You see more social media and advertising and messaging through different, you know, and flyers. You don't see nearly as much, you know, door knocking and, you know, face-to-face, flesh-to-flesh interactions between candidates and citizens. So.
Yeah, that's especially true with our federal representatives. So I assume this all applies to those races as well, though, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's another kind of unique, something that's very unique to the Montana plan. Not only affects local and state, but it affects federal races as well, because we're not talking about a regulation or a system put in place for the candidate or committee. We're talking about corporations. So if a corporation can't spend in our state, they can't spend in any race, whether it be state, whether it be a local race or federal race. So it's really rather unique. And one of the things I think makes people smile.
Right.
Good. Yeah. That's
didn't
great.
Didn't the tester race like break some kind of records as far as spending for a Senate race?
I believe so. I don't have all of that in front of me today, right, Russell, but I know that just take independent expenditures alone, not what the candidates raised themselves and the parties raised them, just independent expenditures in that Senator Sheehy, Senator Tester race was $180 million.
Wow. I mean,
if you go back to a race, a Senate race prior to Citizens United 2008, there's like a total of $50,000 spent total.
Wow.
I mean, the increase is just, and that, again, that's just independent expenditures. So you add on, you know, Senator Tester, for example, will be the first to tell you there's more dark money spent in, you know, in support of him than there was for Senator Sheehy. So it's not a Republican or a Democrat issue. You know, there's dark money on both sides and they're both spending it or raising it like it's nobody's business.
Yeah, so, they don't have a choice, right, at this point.
Yeah, well, they again, if they're not coordinating, if, you know, if they shouldn't, nobody should be coordinating on that most of the time, unless, you know, there's something really nefarious going on. It generally comes as a surprise to the candidates that this group decided to spend this money in this race. So,
yeah,
but now it's just become normal. I mean, they expected, they know there's going to be some amount spent in a race. Now they just expect it. It's really no longer a surprise. Somebody's going to spend money to support or oppose me that I have no idea who they are. You know, I look at the forecast for the North Carolina Senate race, for example. Looking at that race, they expect it's going to cost over $750 million. One race.
Wow.
Almost $750 million.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
So speaking of nefarious, we did have one example in Montana where someone was held accountable, Art Wittig, who was a Republican senator, and he was convicted of what exactly? But did that change anything at all, or was that just kind of a blip?
It did. That it was one of the first cases that was brought and adjudicated, you know, through the system. It was found, you know, by a jury. You know, wasn't a judge or the commissioner, and making that determination upheld the importance of disclosure and transparency, and really brought into light back then, before social media and all of the secrecy, what was alleged and was found to happen is that the candidate worked in coordination with outside groups and then didn't disclose those as contributions to the campaign. And that was ultimately found. So that was kind of the first time something like that at that level was adjudicated and found. So it wasn't it is an important part of our history, because we do hold our candidates and elected officials to account, and it just strengthens, you know, strengthens the rule of law and that foundational law that we have in place.
Right. So where are you in the process right now?
Where we are in the process, we had originally submitted what we felt was a really strong constitutional initiative that would meet all legal scrutiny for getting it placed on the ballot. And we were wrong. The AG said it was legally insufficient and it required more than one vote, and the Supreme Court agreed with the AG. So what we had to do was, very little time, we turned around and we resubmitted, which basically started the clock all over again. So that process doesn't start where we left off. It starts as a brand new, because it's basically a brand new initiative. So currently, as of today, Friday, February 13th, it is now, they are in front of the Attorney General again, and he's on the clock under his statutory clock to rule on the legal sufficiency of our initiatives, which we expect to happen sometime in that first week in March, if not before. If he finishes work sooner, of course, he could find that next week if he wanted to. But he has until, at least to our calculations, sometime in that first week in March to make his determination. And depending on that, if what that determination is, we'll have to make a determination what our next step is. So we're still very hopeful that we will have a ballot initiative that'll be certified for signatures, hopefully sometime from the middle of March to April, sometime in that time frame, that we can begin collecting signatures on between that time and June 19th to place on the November 2026 ballot. So,
right.
And we continue to work hard with volunteers across the state. I mean, it's a good time for me to give a little plug for what we've been doing. We truly are a grassroots effort. All the money we've raised has been through small donor donations to get this effort off the ground and to work with other states and how they can pursue their own Montana plan. And now it's just continuing to work with, you know, the hundreds of, at this point, well over 600 volunteers across the state, and that number grows each and every day. We may be well over 700 as of today. It's all volunteer, and that's what we're doing. People are excited about getting out and gathering and getting to work on this. And I'm going to need each and every one of those folks when we have this compressed timeline to collect anywhere from 30 to 60,000 signatures, depending on which initiative of ours ends up moving through. But we're up for the challenge. So.
Right. So where can people go to find out more about what's going on and what they can do to help?
Thank you for that question. We've made it fairly easy for folks. If we just go to montanaplan.com, they'll hit our website, learn about what we're doing. And from there, there's plenty of links to, and we have, you know, different socials, of course, and we're doing some different things because we can't be collecting signatures. You know, we had fully expected to be collecting signatures today, but we can't because we had to start that process over. But we're not sitting on our hands. We're asking folks to tell us their intent to sign, to sign up, to let us know when, and then our commitment back to them, as soon as the ink is dry on that certification, we'll be reaching out to them to say, okay, we have it ready to sign, meet us here, and we'll get it done. So, you know, we're looking at new and creative ways to keep people excited and engaged. They seem to love what we're doing. Continue to talk to folks across the state, and then also I've ended up having to kind of juggle lots of inquiries from across the United States on how we can do this in our state, and whether it be through ballot initiative or legislation. There's three ways they can do it: through constitutional initiative, through statutory initiative, or through state legislation. I'm in Montana. We're lucky we have all three of those options available to us. But many states only have the option of legislation. So, as a matter of fact, about half the states. So we have folks asking about how they, you know, how they can get involved in their own state. And so we're starting to work on kind of a larger piece on that. And, you know, just kind of enjoying putting Montana back in the spotlight on an area that we've led for 100-some years and that we can be proud of. And, you know, people in Montana see that and like that, and like the fact that we're rolling up our sleeves, we're getting to work, and we're talking about it in a way that's not, I believe, I'm sure folks may disagree with me, but I believe that's non-political. I've invited my friends on the right, I've invited my friends on the left, I've invited, no matter what, you know, where they come from, just to, you know, and ask, just basically ask them one simple question: do you think there's too much money in politics?
Right.
And when you ask that question, there's only one answer, and it's yes. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have agreement, at least right there. It's an avenue for discussion and agreement to make things better, to fix a problem that we know is a problem. You know, and a potential solution that everybody can, I think, embrace and help move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, good luck, sir. And thank you so much for joining me to explain all this.
Thank you for inviting me. Hopefully I can give you a good update as we move forward.
Yeah, that would be great. It'd be exciting to see this start a groundswell across the country too. That'd be amazing.
You've been listening to 56 Counties. I'm your host, Russell Rowland, and I've been talking to Jeff Mangan, who is putting together an initiative to take corporate money out of campaign finance. Join me again next time for 56 Counties.